Hey there, opera fans. I'm Eric Teague. My pronouns are he, him, his, and I'm primarily a costume designer. You may have seen some of my work in different houses around the U.S., but, fun fact, I'm also a trans man. Ever wondered how alternative identities thrive in the opera world? As someone who makes art for his living, I wanted to explore that question the best way I knew how, by talking to some folks. On this show, I'll speak with other artists who exist under the rainbow umbrella, and talk about life, work, and what makes us shine the brightest. So now I'm wearing a new hat, as your host for Come As You Are, the podcast that goes beyond the curtain with our industry's amazing artists from the LGBTQ+ community and our allies. Think of this as a virtual coffee hour with some fascinating people whose work you've heard or seen in your favorite shows. Whether singers, directors, technicians, or designers, the thing that we share in common is that we all defy the gender expectations often associated with our industry. So grab yourself a cup and join us for a good story. I'm so happy to have a truly special guest on the show today. Opera fans will have seen her light up stages across the United States and Europe. Award-winning mezzo-soprano, featured in the New York Times as opera's no-studded rock star, the Jamie Barton. Welcome to the show, Jamie. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah, this is awesome. Up top, here at Come As You Are, we like to get to know folks by introducing our identities. I am, as always, your host and friendly neighborhood trans man, Eric Teague. My pronouns are he, him, his. How about you?
I am your friendly neighborhood, fat, beautiful, badass mezzo-soprano, Jamie, and my pronouns are she, hers.
Yay! Fantastic. And you identify as a beautiful bisexual woman, yes?
I surely do. Yes, I do.
Amazing. Well, welcome, and we're so happy to have you. So a fun fact for our audience to start things off, you and I grew up really close to each other, a couple years apart. You're from Rome, Georgia, originally, and I am from Cartersville, Georgia. So how was your experience growing up in a small southern town as both queer and an artist at the same time?
Well, I'll be honest, I didn't really come to either of those identities until quite late. I mean, I guess in some ways I was definitely kind of an artistic child. I grew up in a family, I think my parents would have been considered the artistic children of their families as well. So within my own family unit, it was just totally normal. But we were the kind of liberal hippie outliers living in the middle of the, you know, the boondocks. The queer thing, I didn't even realize, quite honestly, that I was queer until I was in my 30s. Wow. I had always identified as an ally, but like had never really understood in my own life that I was queer. And it wasn't even that I was like finding attraction to women and, you know, people of all varieties of genders. and just going, no, I can't. No, it wasn't that. I literally just had not clocked it for a number of reasons, but I certainly did clock that I was, I felt at home in the LGBTQIA+ family. The rainbow flag, even before I knew that I was myself queer, was something that brought me community. My best friend in high school was queer, and the people that I gravitated towards in college, a lot of them were queer as well. So it took a little while for me to come around to go, oh, wait a second, I'm queer too. But once I got there, I was like, oh, this makes all of the sense.
Well, you know, like there's no stopwatch on identity, right? So you can take the time that you need to have just those epiphanies in your life. And that's one of the beautiful things about it. I also find that alphabet people and allies tend to be pretty engaging and want to reach out to people of different experiences and just be pleasant. So that's always lovely.
I've been surrounded by really good people, for sure.
Well, that's amazing. I'm happy to hear that. And you've had an enormous career that just keeps on growing and growing and growing. Have there, now that you are out and you've made this discovery about yourself and you're doing the damn thing, have there been moments of feeling exceptionally seen in your work?
So in 2019, the BBC invited me to be the guest singer for the last night of the proms, which is this huge, like, televised kind of event. In the UK especially, it's almost like the Super Bowl. Like, people will literally, like, sit around as a group and watch this concert on television on the BBC, because it happens every year, and it's a super, like, nationalistic kind of celebration of the UK and of classical music. And when people come in to do this, if you're the guest artist, then you tend to do, the tradition is that you come in with some sort of representation of who you are. A lot of times it is really where somebody comes from. So I remember Sarah Walker had a drag designer actually create a gown that had the Union Jack flag in it, like a decade or two ago. Juan Diego Flores came in a whole Mayan Incan costume. Like, it's usually a very over the top kind of thing. And since they invited me in 2019 and it was the 50th year of Stonewall, I thought rather than go with the American swing of things, which had totally been done before, I really started to think about celebrating my queer community. And so I got to raise the pride flag, and I wore a dress that was designed by Jessica John, that had the bisexual flag and this really amazing cape element. It was kind of like ombre dyed into it. But that was in so many ways, it's funny you ask, because, like, for me, when I show up at a job, I am who I am. You know, in the characters that I do, there is a part of me, and part of me undeniably is my queerness. And so I always say, you know, it doesn't matter what character I'm doing, unless the character, like, is specifically not a queer character. If it has to be a straight character, straight in the book, which I haven't met one yet, then, you know, I it is me. And so since I have come out, I've shown up as myself, but that was really the first place that it was like really feeling my queer self in the moment. It was incredible too. I have to say the audience was just insane. Like, when not a classical music audience, really, like, standing room in the whole orchestra section, people were like playing with, like, beach balls and had flags and had crackers and were making all sorts of noise. I mean, yelling. Like, it is a full-on party out there. And when I walked out, I knew what I was getting into, because I had been, you know, friends of mine who have done this had, like, given me the heads up and I had seen videos. But when I walked out there, in one side of the floor audience was somebody with a gigantic pride flag, like, on a pole, waving it. And then on the other side, somebody was there with a bisexual flag of equal size. And it nearly brought me to my knees. I was so moved. And, you know, the response from that particular concert was just so overwhelmingly positive. There absolutely were trolls. There absolutely were haters. There absolutely were news outlets that wrote things that, you know, like, I remember one article was the title of it, which I didn't even read the article, but the title of it was The Last Night of the Proms Isn't Over Until the Fat Bisexual Lady Sings.
Oh, my God.
And clearly it was, you know, written as a piece that was, yeah, it was written as a piece that was definitely, like, against what I was doing. And as I have said before, I think that, you know, 5 years earlier, it might have destroyed me to see something come out like that. But at the time, I saw that article and I was like, heck yeah, The Last Night of the Proms is not over until the fat bisexual lady sings. And don't you forget it.
That's right. That's right. That that performance in particular, I'm so happy to hear that it meant so much to you, because it meant so much to people watching it. Like, it felt amazing to see a colleague out there slaying it, just killing it, and representing the community in such an incredible, graceful, glamorous, gorgeous way. So well done, you, for sure. And, you know.
Well, thank you. I was both really, really happy to do that on a personal level, and also super supported by the BBC. You know, they didn't bat an eye when I said that I wanted to raise the pride flag, you know. So I've got to give credit where credit is due. You can't be what you can't see, and they put me out front, you know. So I'm just glad I got to be a part of that.
Well, gold star BBC, because so often, at least with my bisexual friends, they encounter things like bisexual erasure, because it's not necessarily a particularly visible orientation, unlike other alphabet people, as I like to say. It's something that people's perceptions can often invalidate. So for people who don't know, it's a real problem for a lot of folks. So apart from living your best life, how do you combat bisexual erasure in your life and your work?
Well, I mean, I personally feel very called to be open about my queerness. You know, you're absolutely right. The bisexual erasure is a real issue. And I think a part of the issue is the fact that there are so many people who are bisexual who are living in what looks like a straight relationship, and it's just easier to not have to answer all the questions, and, you know, to not have to justify, you know, the fact that you're bisexual and in a relationship with somebody of the opposite sex. But I very strongly believe that I might have come to this. I might have understood my own bisexuality earlier if I hadn't been told by so many directions in my life that bisexuality is a myth, that bisexual people are just greedy. You know, that bisexuality is a bridge to actual queerness. And none of those things are correct. None of those things are correct. And they all invalidate the experience of people whose, quite simply put, whose attraction to other people has nothing to do with gender, where gender is just not a factor. So I think I am really, that's one of the reasons I'm so loudly, you know, living my queer life, is because I want other people to understand that they're not alone. If you are a bisexual person and you haven't come out because you're worried about the stigma, I want there to be at least one voice out there that's going, hey, you're valid, your sexuality is valid, and you have community. So come on over. The Rainbow Mafia is really fantastic. Come on.
And what an incredible voice it is. That's amazing. I often find that similar sentiment dovetails with my decision of why I wanted to be very open about being trans. Because it was something that I didn't really talk about for a long time. But as you said, that visibility to someone else hopefully will mean something. Because I didn't have a lot of those people when I was coming up either. So that's amazing. That's really fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, I know that we grew up at the same, you know, in the same area and basically at the same time.
Yeah.
But like, tell me if your experience was similar to mine. Like, queer culture where I came from was like, basically like, you're either straight or you're, you know, Will and Grace. You know, you're either completely straight or you are very gay, and there's nothing in between. You know, and the fact of the matter is that there's a reason that the rainbow flag has all the colors, has all the letters. You know, there are so many identities in that queer umbrella. And I'm so glad that we're living in a world now where, you know, I talk with the younger generation, and it's so inspiring. And so it's inspiring on a life level that there is a whole generation of kids who feel just totally free to explore who they are and to identify how they identify without the social strictures that I think you and I probably had, you know, in our coming up. So yeah, it's important. It is important to be able to see that your identity is a real thing. And yes. So I'm glad that you are living loud in that kind of way too.
Oh, for sure. I had so many people also tell me that this trans thing is just because you couldn't hack it as a real lesbian. And some very, very, I think, hateful to lesbians comments like that. And the same kind of nonsense gets lobbed at bisexual and pansexual people all the time. And the only way that we can really fix this is to normalize the conversation.
Yeah.
And to show all the different facets of light in that rainbow spectrum.
Yeah.
And yeah, let's do it.
Totally.
And, you know, we can do silly things like these little podcasts and carry on good conversations about this stuff as pretty down-to-earth normal people.
I think, you know, you just described like my queer community.
Yeah.
Pretty normal, very fabulous, but pretty just normal people. Like these people, you know, if any, you know, straight people are listening to this, you know, we are in your family. We are in your community. We queer people are just a part of the fabric of life. Mm-hmm. And I think it's worth honoring that, you know?
Absolutely. Totally. And the other thing that we should think on and honor are all different types of bodies. And as a designer, I love human bodies. I love human forms, and I love making people feel at home in their skins, because it's a very sore subject for myself. So you have been very vocal about being a big person and being out there and being an advocate for big people. And for every role, there's naturally going to be a costume fitting,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
So sometimes they can be a very vulnerable experience, because you're essentially standing there with a room full of strangers, taking your clothes off and putting on a character's clothes. And that can be very, very squicky sometimes. So,
oh, totally. Totally.
I would love to talk about fitting room confidence from the perspective of a performer and a designer, in the spirit of not only collaboration, but mutual support. Have you had some really great costume fittings, or some really terrible ones that you'd be willing to talk about?
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. The first ones that come to mind, quite honestly, are the great ones. I've been so lucky to work with incredible designers, and then also incredible costume shops who are the ones, you know, really building the things and putting, you know, making the fit happen for the person who's there. This is a beautiful experience. I was doing a show one time that had already been done in another location. And so how is often done is that if it goes to another theater, or if there's a different cast of any sort, they still use the designs from the original cast and, you know, copy paste and put them on the new bodies. And the dress that I was wearing for this particular show was like a Empire waist kind of thing. And in my body, I carry most of my weight in the front, like my stomach kind of, you know, like between my boobs and my crotch, that's where the vast majority of my weight is. And I was, especially at this particular point, I was really, really, just really insecure about that. And they put this dress on me, and not only was it just a little on the tight side, but it, you know, that particular cut of dress really kind of emphasizes, you know, the stomach area. And, you know, I took a look in the mirror, and I have to say, like, the head of the costume shop came in, and she must have seen the look on my face, and she looked at me and she was like, nope, nope, nope. We will redesign this if we have to, but we are not putting you on stage looking like that. You don't have to worry. You're going to look beautiful. And it was one of those moments where I remember it so clearly, because I was kind of, you know, in the beginning of my career, I didn't have the capital of, you know, somebody who is, you know, way further in the career and says, no, I'm not going to wear this. You know, like, it was having an advocate who was vocally saying, we will do something that will be in line with what the designer wanted, but is also going to be in line with the body at hand. We respect your body. We want you to love how you look when you go out there. Mm-hmm. And that was just such an incredible experience. On the other side of the coin, there are a lot of not great situations that I've been in, for sure. Especially as a larger person, quite honestly, now when I work in Europe or in Asia, I almost always pack more undergarments than I would actually ever need. Mm-hmm. Because I've learned along the way that, you know, they can't get the bras that I like. They can't get hose that are going to fit me. I was in Taiwan one time and they couldn't even get shoes that fit me. You know, so I've learned to be a little more cognizant of the fact that in the United States, we have so many more resources when it comes to beautifully clothing and designing for larger bodies. And luckily, for the vast majority of the time, I go into a costume fitting and, you know, I think that the people who are there are really excited to be there. They're really masters at their craft. And for the most part, they are really supportive of the singer. But I think it really, I like that you alluded to collaboration. It really is a collaboration of saying, you know, whether it be the technical, like, this is fitting a little too high underneath the arms, or whether it be the, you know, I crouch all night long in this, in this particular role. Can we, you know, do something with the hemline? You know, it could be those technical things. But I think it also is, you know, within reason of the design, because of course the designer is an artist and it is an element of the show. And I want to honor the ideas that have come forth, but the best designers that I've worked with are the ones who are willing to look at my body and say, okay, cool, I designed this for a different body. No problem. We're going to make some adjustments. And, you know, I'm lucky that we live in a time where the costumers and the designers are that generous.
Absolutely. I mean, I find also the most fruitful collaborations are those moments with a performer. And the drawing is not sacred. That's the thing. The art is the sacred part. The human that's embodying the character, going out there, putting everything on stage emotionally and musically and technically, needs that support. You got to go out there with the confidence knowing you look like a million bucks, no matter what the design is. If it's potato sack time, it's going to be a great potato sack and you're going to feel awesome in it. So, yeah.
Oh, heck yeah. I mean, some of my favorite costumes have not been the glamorous ones. Like, I think back to the Ruzalka that I did in San Francisco. It was a David McVicker production. And when I tell you that my Yeji Baba, the witch character that I sing in that, I literally, part of the getting ready process was taking a Sharpie to my teeth. Like, when I tell you, like, she was grody. They even had these prosthetic fingers that, I mean, they were just gigantic sausage fingers that were a bit longer. And it was all in the service of telling this story where this witch is just elemental. She's of the earth. She's also kind of gross. I love that. That's actually one of my favorite things. Like, when I get to play one of those roles where I don't have to be like the pristine queen or something like that, like, I actually kind of love those costumes a lot.
They're the most fun to do because that transformation is awesome. And then you can leave it at the end of the night. You know, you cease to be that character when you walk off stage and get out of the getup. I love that. I mean, Mad Max and Guillermo del Toro have deep places in my heart. So, you know, the Jenny Bevan dirty, dirty, dirty diesel punk design, I'm there for it. And you can see that in a lot of my opera stuff too, not gonna lie.
I have definitely seen that in your stuff and I love it. Like, oh, I love that Mad Max reference. That's fantastic.
Hey, dirty is fun and recycling is fun too, even in clothing. So,
oh yeah,
we're talking about bodies. So let's talk about body modification a little bit, because as the New York Times so eloquently said, you've got a sweet nose piercing in a classical art field.
Yeah.
And every time I see you, you have beautiful purple hair with a nice side shave. So tell us a little bit about your journey of saying, you know what, I'm just going to be me and the casting director can deal with it.
You know, it's kind of funny. I started out this career really trying to fit into the box, you know, trying to show up at auditions and show up at, you know, jobs and whatever, looking the part of an opera singer, to the extent that, like, I joke with my friends, like, I'm Jamie. Jamie Barton mezzo-soprano is a character that I play. You know, Jamie Barton mezzo-soprano is the brand. That is the person on stage. That is the person getting the accolades. I'm just Jamie. I happen to work for Jamie Barton mezzo-soprano, and I love my job. But, like, me, I'm not that. But I didn't understand how dichotomous that divide was, really, until, gosh, it was probably the summer of, like, 2015, I think. I had just gone through some major shifts in my life. I had just gone through a divorce. I was just figuring out that I was queer. You know, like, so many things were coming into view for me. And I was also at the same time just kind of overwhelmed by how quickly the career was going, like how much music I had to learn, how much travel I was doing. And I got to the end of the year and I remember I called my publicist. I was in a cab on the way into New York from the airport. And I texted actually my publicist and I said, "Hey, so it's the end of the season and now I want to shave half of my head and dye the rest of it purple and get all like 20 tattoos and a whole bunch of facial piercings." And she wrote me back and she said, "Okay, why don't we pick one of those and just do one." And hilariously enough, I ended up picking the nose ring and she was the one who booked the appointment. She went with me and we both got nose rings that night. Now, that is, you know, props to an amazing team member of mine, Beth Stewart. You know, that was her showing up for me and going, "It is totally cool to be your authentic self and I support that." But that drive, that craving to shave off half of my head, get 20 tattoos and a whole bunch of, you know, piercings, was from the deficit of being able to be myself or feeling like I was able to be myself. And I realized that for me, I needed that. Like, we spend so much of our time not on stage. You know, I spend so much of my time in my practice room around, you know, family and friends, or if I am, like in pre-pandemic times, traveling most of the year, I spend so much time in the rehearsal room. And then we only have like 5 or 6, maybe 7 or 8 shows, you know? So like, it's actually not a ton of time on stage comparatively to the work that goes into getting there. And it just became really, really clear to me that I needed to honor myself in whatever form that was, you know, in a way that isn't going to detract from, you know, the craft. And what I found is that leaning into that and just embodying my own style, kind of becoming the version of Jamie I wished I could be in high school, is, you know, my cat River is saying hello. But, you know, being the version of myself is so important to being an honest artist. Now, I want to give, you know, credit where credit is due, or reality where reality is due. I had gotten to a place in my career where I had the, I had the privilege to be able to do that. I had already started to make a name. I had already, you know, really cemented where I was in the career, and that went into it. You know, I get a lot of questions from younger singers about, like, okay, is it okay to have creative color hair? Is it okay to have piercings? Is it okay to have tattoos? And in my mind, yeah, absolutely. It is important to be yourself to the, you know, extent that you can, because that translates into being a more honest artist. That translates into having more balance in your life, to where you're not just giving, you know, 23 out of 24 hours of the day to you know, the craft, which is wonderful, and we're all happy to be a part of it. But it's so important, I think, for myself and my own sanity, just to be able to be myself outside of this, you know?
That is the truth right there. Having that personal ownership of the skin that you're in is crucial to being an available and open and willing to be vulnerable artist. Jamie Barton, icon in all ways. Again, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today and share some of your story. You're a truly magical human, and I'm glad to know you.
They absolutely same in return.
Mwah. You, our dear listeners, can keep up with Jamie's work at jamiebartonmezzo.com and take a look at my design work at ericteaguedesign.com and Oppergeist on Etsy and Instagram. If you've enjoyed today's episode, please like and subscribe. Many thanks to the Atlanta Opera for making this program possible. We're happy to be one of several podcasts produced by the Opera, so please check out the other shows on the network, The Business of Opera and Blink Opera. That's all for now, but remember, y'all means all, so come as you are, and your spotlight is waiting. Bye, y'all!